Book of Mark, chapter number 12, and this morning we looked at the model of giving. Jesus loved us and gave himself for us. Tonight we'll look into the motivation of giving. I've told you this story before, but there was a man and he was enjoying his vacation. He had a condo on the beach and he was really enjoying a nice walk outside on the warm beach, and suddenly he was attracted by just the screams of panic. And this woman was standing in front of her child, and finally he deduced that the child had swallowed a coin. And she was just panicking, trying to figure out how in the world she would stop her little boy from choking. And so the man didn't hesitate. He ran up to the child, grabbed him by his heels, gave him a few shakes, and the coin fell out. And the woman was just astounded. She said, "You seem to know just how to get that money out of his throat. Are you a doctor?" And he said, "No, ma'am, I'm with the IRS." Thank you, Rudy. That was a great groan back there. That was perfect. Well, the Lord shouldn't have to drag anything out of us, right? Did you know that money is a biblical topic? I don't think we talk about it a lot. I asked somebody once to help me preach for Giving Month and said, "Could you preach a message on giving?" And they said, "I don't want to preach a message on giving." We're excited about that topic, but it's a very biblical topic. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, one out of every six verses deals with money. Out of the 29 parables that Jesus told, 16 deal with a person and his money. So money is a very biblical topic. And we come across it here in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, verse 41, it says, "And Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples and saith unto them, Verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living." In this story here, this account, we find that there was a giver that caught the eye of Christ. There was a lot of people giving at the temple that day. There was a line of people there to give, and they were throwing in their offering, but only one person received Christ's attention and commendation. He only called to their attention one widow woman. And there's a truth in this passage that may or may not have occurred to you. It kind of occurred to me as I was studying this out. We've studied this out before, but particularly today, I thought about this. You know, Jesus was sitting at the treasury. He was watching people give their money. Do you know that Jesus observes our giving still today? He's the Alpha and Omega. He sees all there is to see. He knows all there is to know. And so he sees our giving. He sees our giving. And he knows our hearts. He knows the motivation of our giving. And I wonder if we're the kind of givers that would catch the eye of Christ. Yeah, if Christ commented on my giving, on your giving, what do you suppose he would have to say? And are you prepared to ask Christ to challenge you in this area and ask him to show you how he would have you to give? So tonight I just want to describe some aspects of this story to you and apply it a little bit. First of all, we see the scene here. It says in Mark chapter 12, verse 41, that Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. So we have this setting. They're in the courts of the temple. And there were a lot of chest-like receptacles. They were called trumpets because of their shape. They kind of trumpeted out to receive the money. And Ben has a slide there for you, an artist's rendition of the widow offering her mites there. And so there were these receptacles on the wall there that some scholars think they might have even been labeled to indicate where they would go, where the money would go, and for which type of offering they were designed. And one by one, people would walk by and drop in their contribution. And so Jesus is sitting here and he's watching this. And first of all, Jesus observes why they are giving. Jesus observes why they are giving. He watches our giving. He sees our hearts. And in Matthew chapter 6, he described it to his disciples. He said, "Take heed that you do not your alms before men, to be seen of them. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have the glory of men. Verily I say unto you that they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly." So Jesus is sitting here, he's watching these people lined up to give, and there were those that it was very obvious why they were giving. You know, maybe they had their sack of coins and they shook them a little bit as they walked down to get people's attention. Or they tossed the coins in with a little bit more vigor to make sure they bounced real well on the bottom. You know, Jesus said that there were people in that day that would sound a trumpet so that they could have men's attention while they give. They were giving for attention. But Jesus said that when we give, it ought to be in secret. It ought to be so secretive that our right hand does not know what our left hand doeth, or other way around. But, you know, this is one of the reasons that I personally, and I'm not saying this is just my opinion, that I personally like online giving. I mean, at the beginning of the year, I set it up, and my right hand has no idea what my left hand is doing. Got my statement at the end of the year, and there it was. That's what we gave. You know, I like it for that reason. I like it also because I don't always remember otherwise. And so I can make my commitment. I can set something up. Some of you in this room prefer it. You just like it better to make a habit of it every single paycheck or every single week to go through that. But whatever it is, Jesus knows why we do it. I mean, we don't pass the offering plates anymore, but we still could go by the plate and wait till somebody's watching and drop that $100 bill in or whatever. He knows why we are doing it, or we could make a big deal of it. He also observes in this story, he observes what is given. Jesus saw what was given. It says that many gave much, and then the widow just gave a little bit. Jesus makes no comment when the rich poured in much. When they took their bag full of coin and they dropped all of it in. And it must have made quite a noise. It could have been quite a spectacle, as Jesus described in Matthew 6. But I don't really think he was impressed with the large amounts. I love the fact, though, that Jesus knows what we give. He knows the amount. Every bunch of coins that fell into those boxes, Jesus knew how much it was. And beyond that, he also knew how much it meant to the individual giving. And he knew that the widow only gave just a little bit. He knew that the rich gave quite a lot. But beyond that, he knew how much it meant to them. He observes what is given. He also observes how it is given. How it is given. It reminded me of 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 through 7, which say, "This I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully, every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver." Jesus saw this widow, beyond her, the amount that she gave, and beyond the way that she gave, he saw how she gave. He saw that it was all that she had. He knew the difference between her and everyone else there that day. God is far more interested in how you give than how much you give. What's your motivation for giving? What's your attitude toward giving? If Jesus observed your giving, would he see giving out of obligation? Well, I do this because it's my duty to do so. I have to do this. So what I was taught, some people give to get something out of God. They think that by putting something in the plate, that God is going to turn around and give something back. And they do it with that motivation in mind. Some people, as we've already talked about, give to impress or give to have influence. I'm sure you've seen this in churches before. It's well known that so-and-so gives a large amount, and so when they speak in a business meeting, you better listen. We don't struggle with that here, but that's happened before. Would he see any giving at all? Hopefully he sees a cheerful giver. He sees how we give. And what set this woman apart from the rich wasn't the amount that she gave, it was the manner in which she gave. She gave sacrificially. She gave sincerely. She gave joyfully out of all that she had. And I wanted you to notice this too. Jesus doesn't condemn the giving of the rich here. He didn't declare that it was meaningless, but he did say that her gift was far more valuable because of her attitude, because of her sacrifice. One author wrote this. He said, when it comes to our giving, God sees more than the portion. He also sees the proportion. Men see what is given, but God sees what is left. And by that, he measures the gift and the conditions of our heart. If you measure the level of your giving not by what you give, but by what you keep, does it still satisfy you? This one kind of hurts a little bit, but how much does your cable bill cost? Boy, we put out a lot of money for those things, don't we? And nowadays, you have tiny little subscriptions to this service and that service, and they all add up until they get you for the same amount that your cable company would have got you anyway. But we pay a lot of money for those things. What about your car loan? Pay a lot of money to have a certain kind of car. Your hobby? We pour a lot of money into those things. Your lifestyle? You know, you have to have this or you have to have that, and it's expensive. Reminds me of the story of the pig and the chicken. They were in a barnyard, and there was a tent revival going on, and they heard about the need to feed the hungry and the offering that was being given. And so the chicken and the hen started talking about how they might contribute. And the hen said, I know, we'll provide bacon and eggs for the church to feed the hungry. Well, the pig thought about that suggestion for a minute. He said, well, I have one problem with your bacon and egg solution. He said, for you, for the chicken, it only requires a contribution, but for me, it's total commitment. You know, the church is filled with people that make contributions. But what Christ saw was total commitment. And that's what set this offering apart. And I want to ask, how are we approaching the opportunity to give to the Lord? Is it just a contribution? Or do we look at it as a commitment? That's the scene that's described for us. And I want you to notice also the subject here. The subject. Mark 12:42 says, there came a certain poor widow. She's the subject of this story. And she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And I want you to understand four observations about this woman. They're not deep. They're pretty obvious. But first of all, the Bible tells us she was a widow. She was a widow. And we don't fully grasp this. You've probably heard me say it before, but being a widow often brought a lot of challenges. Because in that day, women hardly at all worked. As a matter of fact, when Ruth went out to glean the fields, that was not normal. That was not normal for her to do that. Women did not work. They weren't able to build a career. They weren't able to provide for themselves. And so if they had no husband, they lost their main source of income. A lot of times, they would have to go back to their father's house. If they didn't have that, they had no income at all. And I found an article about that. It says, a woman who has lost her husband occupied a precarious position within ancient society. It was not common for women to work. If a woman's husband died, she would have no provision unless she was able to return to the house of her father, which you remember Ruth's mother-in-law urged Ruth and her sister to go back to their father's house. The Mosaic law allowed for levirate marriage as a protection for these women, and it included other injunctions against taking advantage of widows and regulations providing for them within the worshiping community. And these requirements are repeated in prophetic and wisdom traditions. Accusations from the prophets in particular suggest that they were not always followed. God is said to be especially attentive to the cry of the widows, and he is presented as their special protector throughout the Old Testament. This woman was a widow, which meant she had no means of providing for herself. And then we also discover not only was she a widow, she was indeed a poor widow. So she wasn't just without her husband, she was also poor, destitute. Coinage of that day carried value in and of themselves. Now, our coins nowadays, they're not worth anything. They're scrap metal. But the government assigns a value to them, right? Well, coinage in that day actually had value in it of itself. The greater the value of the metal, the more metal in the coin, the more valuable the coin was. And so oftentimes the coins would reflect their value by their size. Ben, I have a picture of all of these different coins and their sizes, right? So you can see the different sizes of these coins because the weight of the metal actually reflected their value. The mite, as it's referred to here, was likely bronze or copper, a pretty cheap metal. According to many scholars, it was about a centimeter in diameter and likely the very smallest coin ever struck. And so we have a picture of just that coin, Ben. There you go. So a tiny little coin. If Don Timmerman were here this morning, would have asked him to bring it. That's probably about the size, Nathan, of the euro he's carrying around. He's got a 1 cent euro. Just tiny. With that money, she might have been able to buy a handful of grapes or a reservation at the public bathhouse. In our day, maybe a dollar or two. Maybe. Some Bible scholars believe that the minimum contribution at the temple that the religious leaders had set was 2 mites. So some Bible scholars believe that in all of their rulemaking, the religious leaders said, well, if you're going to give at the temple, it has to be at least 2 mites. And so maybe, just maybe, this poor woman was faced with the dilemma. Do I give it all or do I give nothing? And we, of course, know she gave it all. She gave it all. She was a poor widow, and this is quite obvious, but I want you to understand this. She was a widow. She was a poor widow. She became a poorer widow, didn't she? She walked away poorer than she was. She gave all that she had. Someone said, Jesus, of course, did not deny that the rich gave large sums. He merely said that the widow gave still more. For theirs was only a contribution, generous though it might be, while hers was a total sacrifice. It is good to remember that God measures giving not by what we give, but by what we keep for ourselves, and that the widow kept nothing, but gave both coins all that she had. I want you also to realize that we're given no further information. Jesus does not say, now disciples, you see that woman? She's going to get health and wealth because of what she just did. Blessings are coming her way. He never said that. He didn't tell them at all that her situation would improve. He did not say there would be any kind of immediate reward. We're never promised those things as Christians. There's this mindset that, well, if I do this, then God is going to open up the floodgates and just pour it on. And that's not what Jesus says here. He gives no indication whatsoever that she was not going to remain a poor widow. That's not our motivation to give. She gave all that she had with no expectations. She was a widow, a poor widow, went away poorer, but she was a praised widow. She was a praised widow. She wasn't recognized by the people around her, but she was recognized by Jesus Christ. There's no mention. I want you to notice this. This is something that I thought of. Who did Jesus talk to about this widow? Well, his disciples. They were just sitting there observing. Jesus didn't go up to the widow and say, I just want you to know that blessed me. He didn't talk to her. There's no mention of him ever approaching her personally. She did not hear this praise. She was not aware that God's Son was watching her. Sometimes you might feel like your efforts go unnoticed. But you know the Bible teaches us that God keeps careful records. Galatians 6:9 says, "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not." 1 Corinthians 3:8 says, "He that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor." That's talking about giving the gospel and sharing the gospel. 1 Corinthians 15:58 says, "Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." This little widow woman, this poor woman, the praise, she did not hear it. The disciples heard it. She may have never known in her lifetime that the Son of God was sitting there watching her give. But she was the subject of his recognition. The scene is there at the temple, and then Jesus gives a short sermon here to his disciples. In verse 43, he calls unto him his disciples and saith unto them, "Verily I say unto you, that this poor woman, widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury, for all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living." A few thoughts about her giving. First of all, her giving was a standard. Can you imagine that? This widow gave just two mites, just enough to buy maybe a handful of grapes. And Jesus used her giving as the standard to teach his disciples what giving was all about. He used her as an example. Is your giving an example? Is it an example to your family, to your kids, to your grandkids? Are you faithful in the area of giving? Are you intentional in your giving? There was a lot of people lined up just going through the motions, just giving because that's what everybody else was doing. I guarantee you that when this widow woman gave, she was intentional in her giving. She thought it through. Are you sacrificial in your giving? There was a man by the name of Robert Arthington. He lived in a single room. He cooked his own meals. He shared his friendships with students that were in need. He gave a tremendous amount of money during his lifetime to missions. When he died, his estate was worth about $5 million, which he willed to missions. After his death, a letter he had received from a missionary was found in his belongings, and it said, this is the missionary writing to Robert Arthington, it said, "Were I in England again, I would gladly live in one room, make the floor my bed, a box my chair, another my table, rather than the heathen should perish for lack of knowledge of Jesus Christ." Robert Arthington was determined to make that kind of self-denial the pattern for his life. Lived a simple life and gave all that he could. Her giving was a standard. And Jesus says her giving was superior. Can you imagine the thoughts in the disciples' minds? The disciples, they were human. They were wowed by the temple. They were wowed by the decorations. And everything was beautiful. Everything was ornate. There was this long line of people with, you know, beautiful clothing on, all of the rich, and they were just well-dressed, and here was a bunch of fishermen and guys like that. And Jesus says, "You see that woman right there? Her gift was bigger than all the rest." He proclaims to these men that was a superior gift. What made it superior? Well, it was obviously not superior in its amount. Maybe the disciples thought, you know, "Jesus, did you add that up right? You know, it didn't look like much to us." Well, it wasn't the amount, it was the motive. It was her motive. There's an experience in the life of the English preacher and theologian, Andrew Fuller, that illustrates this truth. There was a time when Fuller went back to his hometown to collect money for foreign missions. And one of his contacts was an old friend. And when presented with the need, this old friend said, "Well, Andrew, seeing that it's you, I'll give you $5. And Fuller said, "No, I can't take your money for my cause, seeing it is me. and gave the money back. And the man saw his point and said, Andrew, you are right. Here's $10, seeing it is for Jesus Christ. And we need to remember that the amount we give isn't really what's important. It's the motive that Christ examines. And her giving was a standard for Jesus to teach his disciples. He declared that it was superior to all the other gifts that were given that day, and her giving was sincere. The disciples were impressed with the amount. It was Jesus who was impressed with the heart. Someone once wrote, the gift does not matter to God so much as the giver. The gift does not matter so much as the giver. Jesus saw the individual. He saw the giver. He saw the woman. He knew her needs, and he was impressed with her gift. In 1995, there was a story that broke of an elderly woman that donated $150,000 to the University of Southern Mississippi for their scholarship fund. She was 87 years old, but she had been forced to drop out of school in the sixth grade to take care of her family. For more than 60 years, she made a living washing clothes, saving as much as she could from her meager pay. And she wanted others to have the opportunity for an education she never received, so she gave away the money that she had saved for so many years. You know, in our day and age, people value what a person has. That's how we measure success, by how much you get, by how much stuff you are able to amass in your lifetime. But God values how much a person gives. And Jesus saw all of these people giving in the temple that day, and he praised the one who gave just a fraction of a penny because it represented a sacrifice. Christian giving ultimately boils down to having faith in God's promises. This woman gave all that she had. How could she do that? Well, in faith in God. There was a pastor in Texas. And this pastor was asked by a man by the name of Mr. Duke if he believed in tithing, which of course the pastor said he did. Well, then the man got more personal and said, well, do you practice tithing? And the pastor said, well, no, I suppose I don't. I believe in tithing, but I can't practice it. You see, I have 13 children at home. Every meal, 15 people sit down at my table. And he said, I receive a meager $125 a month, $1,500 a year as a salary. I have to maintain my own horse and buggy for constant traveling. It's impossible to take care of all of the needs of a family of 15 out of a mere $125 a month and have money left over to tithe. He said, so yes, sir, I believe in tithing. I preach tithing, but I myself cannot practice it. Mr. Duke was a wealthy man, so he said, well, I want you to set out to give God at least $12.50 every month, as soon as you get your salary. Then, as you feel led, you may give more. And I promise you, if you need help, I will give it. Just write me a letter and say, Mr. Duke, I am giving a tithe, but I miss the money. I need it for my family. I've given this year so much. I promise you that I'll send you a check by return mail immediately. He asked the man, the pastor, are you willing to tithe on that basis? Well, the pastor was very excited at the offer and started tithing. That year, God took care of his needs in many unexpected ways. He never had to send a letter to Mr. Duke. And near the end of the year, he came to this realization that he had trusted in Mr. Duke's promise to provide for him more than he had trusted in all the promises of God. He said, I had taken the word of a man when I did not take the promise of God. Now I had proven God's promises and found that he took care of me and my big family on a small salary and found that $112.50 per month took care of our family better with God's blessing than $125 did without being under the blessing which he has made with those who seek first his kingdom. You know what? What is it that we're placing our trust in? This widow woman gave all that she had. The only way she could do that was by faith in God. And like I said already, she had no promise that health and wealth would be poured out. No, that's a relatively new idea. She received no recognition herself. She may have never known that this story was written for all time for us because of her sacrifice. Do you know the Bible is full of people, full of examples of people that gave? Abraham was willing to give his son. Had the knife out, ready to go before God stopped him. Barnabas, in the New Testament, was willing to give his land to help the church. The Apostle Paul was willing to give his life, refused not to go to Jerusalem, was willing to give his life. David came to a circumstance where he was offered everything he needed to sacrifice, and he said, I'm not going to sacrifice to God for free. I'm not to give of the Lord of what cost me nothing. Hannah was willing to dedicate her son, and she did, Samuel. God, of course, was willing to sacrifice his only begotten son for our salvation, and Christ willingly laid down his life for us. The Bible's full of examples of giving. What are you willing to give to the Lord? What's he leading you to give? It's not the amount. It's not the amount. Every single person in here can give differently and will. It has nothing to do with the amount. It has to do with your motive. What's in your heart? Why are you giving? God loves a cheerful giver. He loves a sacrificial giver, a sincere giver. So I just encourage you as we approach the rest of this month, would you examine your motives in giving and ask the Lord, Lord, how would you have me to give? Why am I giving, and what would you have me to give?